And a big welcome to Abadi. Welcome to the first edition of Scots Language Radio, a programme that's going to go into the nukes of the programmes we're feared to try. A programme that's produced to celebrate our native language and at the same time try to fathom out fit's going on and fa's dean fit. We've got news of a new Scots language publishing company up in the northeast, and we honour a 16th century provost of the High Kirk of St Giles, Gavin Douglas. And we're speaking to the one and only Mary Doll herself, Elaine C. Smith, about her love of the Scots language. And she's even gained an exclusive for her first programme. You'll hear it first here, that herself and Rabsy Nesbitt are planning for their special Christmas edition on BBC Scotland. And our special studio guest, who's going to be joining us later on, is Dr. Chris Robinson, Director of the Scottish Language Dictionaries, and we'll be joined by our regular contributor, musician and singer Steve Byrne. But first, far back in the year, the results of the 2011 census in Scotland were released by the National Records of Scotland, or NRS, the organisation that sets out the questions and comes up with the results. And fit it showed whiz that gae near a third o's, 1.5 million folk, speak, write or understand Scots. But fits your definition of a Scots speaker? Well, that's the question I put to the Minister for Learning, Science and Scotland's Languages, Dr. Alistair Allen.
Well, that's an interesting one. I mean, in a sense, that's answered by, or to some extent answered by, the census, where for the first time that very question has been asked. I'm old enough to remember taking part in a campaign for there to be this question in the 2001 census, and remember it being laughed out of all consideration by politicians at the time. But it was in there in the 2011 census, and there was quite a lot of background information was sent out in advance of the census and with the census explaining what Scots was, because there is some confusion in people's minds. But I think people know that Scots means more than just, as I'm speaking just now, Scottish Standard English, English with a Scottish accent. It means using vocabulary and grammar and a distinctive construction of language that some people would call dialect, some people would call language, but those two words are really academic distinctions. But I think if you look at what's contained in the corpus of a lot of Scottish literature, if you listen to what's still spoken on the streets particularly, but not just in rural Scotland, it's very easy to tell you what Scots is.
Why do you think the majority of Scots speakers still speak in English when we're in a formal situation?
Well, the reasons for that, as you know, are historical, and it's not unique to Scots. I mean, it's the same with lots of languages. The fact that at the time of the Reformation, the Bible wasn't translated into Scots. The fact that at the time of the Union of the Parliaments, the political class gave up speaking Scots. All these factors a long way back in our history mean that for a lot of people the register doesn't exist, or it's difficult to use a register of language to cope with formal situations. But I mean, we shouldn't be surprised about that, and that's not unique to Scots. It's a feature of languages that haven't enjoyed status. And overcoming that, of course, is part of the challenge for any movement to develop a language and give it new life.
Do you think there's a culture change, though, in the wind?
Well, I hope there is. I mean, certainly across the political spectrum, I would like to think support exists. It certainly didn't used to. I can remember in the lead-up to the 2001 census, people standing up in the chamber of this place and queuing up to mock the idea of there being a question on Scots in the census, and queuing up to mock the idea that there was such a thing as the Scots language. We still see elements of that. I mean, some of the political response there was to the idea of Scottish texts in higher English provoked some of this extreme reaction as well. But I think that this kind of reaction against the Scots language and Scottish culture more generally is fading into obscurity. I think people are a bit more relaxed about who they are than they used to be.
How easy can you speak in Scots? If I started to speak with you in Scots now, can you do it as well back to me?
Well, I do. The language I grew up with, and the place I grew up in, and the borders, Scots is the first kind of language on anybody would use. I do think it's the first language, certainly my parents and grandparents, my grandparents probably wouldn't have used anything else for Bai.
How would you like to see this language being promoted and encouraged?
Well, what do you do to for it, Scots? What do you do to make sure that Scots gets used more, to make sure that there's places that you can use Scots? I do. The first thing you have to do is to do something of the skills, and I'm pleased that something is happening of the skills by way of new folk to work with bairns of the skills with the Scots language. Scots language coordinators is the first thing they're working on now, and that'll mean that for the first time ever, that'll be folk, its job is to work with the Scots language of the skills.
Now, the coordinators have just been appointed. Can you tell us a wee bit more about that programme?
Well, there'll be something between 3 and 6 of them. We don't ken the number yet, but they'll be in different airts and parts of the country, and they'll have to make their own job to some extent, but certainly what they'll have to do is make sure that materials exist, stuff exists for teaching, that they're doing a lot to encourage folk and give folk a ease with work of the skills, and making sure that local authorities, councils, is thinking about Scots as well.
But how would you change attitudes?
Well, attitudes will only change when folk see that some folk is taking the issue seriously. For instance, attitudes towards Scots has changed. There's no doubt about it. You didn't hear folk just quite say glibly talk about Scots as slang the way that they did. There's plenty of folk that does think your own way still. But I think the fact that there's mere Scottish literature of the skills has had a muckle effect in the way folk thinks about Scots, because certainly if folk kens that there was a time when kings and markers used Scots, they'll maybe think twice before miscrying it.
So you're hopeful?
Oh, aye. I'm certainly hopeful that there's things can be done for the Scots language, and I think the fact that folk was voting with their feet, you could say, the census, be shown that they were prepared to say it, the Spark Scots, to me is a good place to beg a future for the language of the future.
Dr. Alistair Allen, to beg a future for the language of the future. That's a great phrase. And the right time to introduce my special guest today, Director of the Scottish Language Dictionaries, Dr. Christine Robinson. Welcome, Chris.
Hello.
Okay, before we speak about your day job, give your reaction to that last sentence for you, Dr. Allen. Is it a language for the future?
Absolutely. We've had a right boost with the census, with the Scots coordinators. There's some braw teachers in the schools. They need as much support as we can give them. The census itself was a big step for it, but now we've got to start preparing for the next census, because I've got a feeling folk were really underreporting their inability to speak Scots. And with a number like 1.5 million, you can't ignore that.
You can't do it, but is it just another box to be ticked? Fit good is it going to be?
It's fair to who we are. It's fair to our self-respect. We've got to get rid of this Scottish cringe that we've been haunted Bai for so many years.
OK, I'm going to bring in SLR's Head of Music and other things for Bai, the one and only Steve Byrne. Do you think, Steve, there's enough political appetite to support Scots? And especially if Dr. Allen mentioned there, the development of the language in schools.
I think it's a growing area. Definitely there's been an awful lot of leaps for it in the last 10 years, I would say, especially with the current Scottish Government. There's been a lot of support, a lot of siller towards it, and things like ticking the major Scots language organisations in direct funding arrangements with them. They didn't have to bid for money every year now. So that's a serious statement, I think, going tent that the government's making. And even in the white paper thing that's just come out at the end of November there, they explicitly say Scots and Gaelic as languages of the country, they should be supported as part of a potential independent Scotland, maybe even bigging it into the constitution.
Because you've been working in schools just recently, haven't you? Gone into primary schools.
Aye.
Up near Arbroath.
That's right, aye. And it's been easier maybe than ever to get ahead of just a wee bit of money, you know, just a puckle of siller to get into the schools and work with bairns for a few sessions at a time and just begin to do what I would cry normalising the language. You know, it's words that the bairns recognise themselves. They'll say, oh, my granny says that, my father says that. They didn't necessarily feel half a confident in saying it themselves to lean another. But when we're in the skills and you say, this is just normal way of speaking, and then they sing the songs, it's a way of going for it.
Chris, is there enough clout, enough backing in schools, do you think?
Well, could you, Amir? There's a lot of insecurity among the teachers. Mm. They haven't had the education themselves in Scots. We need to get that into the university courses that the teachers are doing before they go into the classroom.
On another tack completely, there's a lot of interest for new words to get into the Oxford English Dictionary. This year's belter was selfie, for instance, and last year's it was omnishambles. I love that name, omnishambles. Do you ever get new words in your dictionary, or is Scots a language something that just doesn't move with the times, it's stuck?
Oh, what I get new ones? Since we're talking about schools, one of the ones that's come in from schools recently is spraff, which is what we're adding in the day, just spraffing. Speaking to you another at length. Then there's the wee set of words with kunsel in them, like kunsel juice.
Kunsel juice?
Which is water. And kunsel telly, which, depending on where you come from, it could be terrestrial telly or it could be a satellite telly. Mm-hmm. There's twa different points of view in that, and we're waiting to see what Ian wins.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And if you come from a bit of a deprived area, you might take kunsel curtains.
What's that?
Boarded up windies. And then we borrow a lot of words from travellers as right. well, like I think Aberdeen kins Gadgee mm-hmm. and Barry.
Aye.
And in the Edinburgh area, we've got Shan.
Is that part of the cant? Was it?
Aye.
Started off that way.
And
it spreads into the general population. So in Edinburgh, Shan, mm-hmm. just generally bad or unwell. Aye. But teenage girls in Edinburgh have made it their own. And the place, miss, that's Shan. That's no fear.
That's great.
Long may it continue. Steve, time for a bit of music. Fit your first choice.
Well, I'm flitting off a soon, so...
you booked a house?
I have, aye. We're getting out to Aldriggy after about 18 years. So, heading out to East Lothian. So, I thought we would hear a song for that neck of the woods. And fit better singer than a lad for Preston Pans, Davy Steele and Kilbeg with a song for that part of the world, Johnny Cope.
In the jail in free Dunbar St. Charlie, meet me and ye door, and I'll learn ye the air to war. If you'll come to the calls in the morning, hey Johnny Cope, are you walking yet, or are your drums a beating yet? Can ye were walking, I would wait to gang to the coals in the morning. When Charlie looked the letter upon, he drew his sword, his scabbard from sin. Follow me, my merry men, and we'll meet Johnny Cope in the morning. Fine out, Johnny, be as good as your word, and meet me there with fire and sword, and then flee like a frightened bird that's raised for its nest in the morning. Hey Johnny Cope, are you walking yet, or are your drums a beating yet? Can ye were walking, I would wait to gang to the coals in the morning. When Johnny Cope, he heard all this, he thought it wadna be amiss to hae a horse in readiness to flee fae the pans in the morning. Fine out, Johnny, get up and run, for the healing bagpipes mark their din. It's best to sleep in your ain heel skin, it'll be a bloody morning. Johnny Cope, are you walking yet, or are your drums a beating yet? Can ye were walking, I would wait to gang to the coals in the morning.
Johnny Cole, the Dunbar camp folks bearded him. Where's all your men? The deal confound me, I didn't ken. I left them all in the morning. Faith, called Johnny, I got sick of flag with their big claymore and their fella beg. If I face them again, they'll break my legs. So I wish ye all good morning. Hey Johnny Cole, are you walking yet? Or are your drums a beaten yet? Can ye were walking, I will wait to gang to the coals in the morning. Truth no, Johnny, ye are now bleed to come when you's, oh, you're in defeat, and leave your men in sick a state, see early in the morning. Hey, Johnny Cole, are you walking yet, or are your drums a-beaten yet? Can ye were walking, I will wait to gang to the coals in the morning.
Davy Steele and Cole Beg. What album is that from again, Steve?
It's called Seeds to the Wind on Green
Seeds
Tracks.
To the Wind, aye. Of course. Aye, one of my favourite albums of all time. Right, Canty Creators and Cronies, it's Christmas. Now, I came about to speak about your day job as well, Chris, but before we go there, Steve, customs at Christmas. Do we hear any customs at Christmas?
Well, it's been a bit of a stair fecht, I hate to say, Frieda. I mean, the cliche is that we didn't hear that much in the way of Christmas customs in Scotland. My mother would say that a Christmas day was just another working day.
Oh.
And I suppose it is actually true, you know, it's borne out by the folklore when you're going hunting in the archives and whatnot. And we've made our things today with New Year and sick like.
Mm-hmm.
But aye, we've a puckle of things there.
And there's no wonder that you kind of find much about Christmas because... The old word for it would have been Yule. There's pages mm-hmm. and pages in the dictionary of words of meanings to do with Yule.
Aye.
And it used to be on the 6th of January, so no wonder it gets mixed up with Hogmanay.
So you can celebrate twice?
You can celebrate for days on end.
I think they still celebrate all Yule up in the Northern Isles, particularly on the 6th.
There's a few villages up for I came for that still do that, not just the Northern Isles. Okay, give another custom then, Chris.
Well, there's one or two things that you shouldn't do in Christmas. You shouldn't greet in Christmas. If you cry in Christmas, you're said to break Yule's gird.
Yule's gird?
Yule's gird, the piece of Christmas.
Oh.
That's bad luck.
Okay, Steve.
No greeting.
Urine?
Well, I've got in here, which is about sounds, which, of course, as it says in this particular extract, if you're not familiar with the delicacies of the Scotch menu, is a bit like gruel, you know, a dust of oatmeal with husks of corn, and they leave it to steep till it's it becomes sour. But it says here, the carrying of sowens is not, however, so much a custom of the first footing of the present New Year's Day as of a parallel procedure on the even of Old Yule. Nor are the sowens, like the whisky or spiced ale, for internal application only. The Reverend Mr. Meehy of Dinnet. Writes as follows. The carrying of sowens on Old Yule was mainly a token of hospitality. In this part of the country, those carrying it from house to house were generally a band of young folks of both sexes. They approached each house in turn, chanting this ditty. Rise up, good wife, and shack your feathers. Rise up and dinna swear. For here we've come with our Yule sowens, and fain would taste your cheer. And if they were refused admittance, the door was liberally bespattered with sowens in revenge. And this is still practised in the district, it says here.
That's a criminal waste of good sowens. I might be looking forward to my Bucks Fizz Christmas morning, but 100 years ago, I would have been looking forward to my Yule Brose, because that would be brose made with a stock of beef as a special treat.
I was just going to say, I bet they still do that in Dinnet. Getting a few folk in Dinnet,
they would
throw sounds at folks' doors. And just as before we go off a custom, there's a wee custom I have from the village I grew up in, Portnalky in Banffshire, and we would gather at the bakery, the local bakery.
Aye.
And Abdi would put their turkeys in the oven every Christmas to get them a cook it, because it was the cheapest way of getting nothing cooked. He didn't have to cook individual turkeys out of the village. So I'd be together at the bakehouse, get the wee glass of sherry and watch the turkeys going down the road. And then there was an almighty fecht, because Abdi said, no, that's my turkey. That's not your turkey. Because the name tags would fall off.
Newfangled Christmas dinners, these turkeys. What about your Christmas goose or your Christmas fish?
I wouldn't like a Christmas fish. I think it's a good time to bring on the next item before we go into mere culinary arts. It's a new publishing company, news of a new publishing company, Chris, up in the northeast. This will interest you. Now, there's fewer bonnie sechs, I think, in Aberdeenshire than Craigievar castles. Bonnie, it's a bonnie colour. And it just teets at you through the trees. But Craigievar could seem to be famous for mair than the castle. It's the home of a new Scots language publishing house called Tapsell Teary. And Lynn Menny paid a visit to Duncan Loggerby, the brains ahead it. She started by asking Duncan about the name.
Well, I always think of Tapsell Teary as meaning chaotic, but I think one of the best ways of describing it to people is usually to say topsy-turvy, and it sort of seemed to fit quite well with my sort of attitude about the press, so I just sort of went with it and it stuck, you know.
And so Tapsell Teary, it's a new publishing house in Scotland, and either very bravely or maybe just gallously, you're going to publish in Scots.
Aye, we're starting off doing poetry pamphlets, so that basically means anything, well, sort of 32 pages or maybe slightly more, with a focus on Scots. Seeing as I'm based in Craigievar, really so far that's meant Doric. But I'm looking at all different dialects of Scots as well. But yeah, I'm not wanting to limit myself, really, but the main focus is certainly on the Scots language, Doric in particular.
So why Scots? I mean, were you scunnered with English, or what was the thinking?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it probably is just a sort of gallus, sort of foolhardiness, really. I love Scots. I love reading Scots. I love the language itself, and I want to see it survive and kick on into new forms. And I think it's a good time as well, actually, to be publishing in Scots. I think there's a certain optimism surrounding Scots in general that probably hasn't been there for a wee while.
But at the same time, there is a sort of general underlying kind of feeling, isn't there, that Scots poetry can be a bit kale-eared. So are you going to be guy-picky about your authors?
I am going to be picky. I think you're probably right in some ways that there is a perception of Scots verse as being kale-eared, as you say. From my own experience, I've noticed round about the Northeast is a very strong tradition of writing Scots verse that continues to this day. But I think what I'm looking to do is perhaps go down a slightly different route into more avant-garde, if I can use that word, avant-garde and experimental work. I'm wanting to provide a space for people to push forward the language and to experiment with it and to try different things. Because I have a sort of a theory that the avant-garde is always important for anything, what happens in the avant-garde always trickles back and enriches the general popular culture. And I think for Scots to be a thriving language, we need all different aspects of it.
So your first pamphlet is out, published very recently.
Yes, yes.
The Quiet Chiel, by Bill Thom. So tell us about it.
So The Quiet Chiel is one poem written in, I think you would call it a sort of ballad style. And it's a poem based on two old guys walking home from the pub one night and the trouble they meet along the way.
And what reaction have you had to this first pamphlet?
It's been really positive, actually. I'm glad that I chose it as my first pamphlet because it's very readable and something that I thought that people would enjoy it, and it certainly seems like people are enjoying it, so it's quite good, and it's a really good way for me to start, you know.
I can't help but notice that sitting here musing to you about Tapsell Teary now, you yourself aren't a strongly Doric speaker. So how does that work?
Well, I think one of the things is that I was brought up in the Northeast and I can always understand Doric. You know, I can speak it actually if I want to. Or it usually happens the more comfortable I am, or generally the drunker I am as well, you know. But the thing is, I went to university when I was 17 and moved down to Glasgow and lived in the Central Belt for 10 years. And it's only the past couple of years that I've moved back up here. But one of the things that I've found is that actually it comes more naturally to me in the written form, so I can actually write in it much more freely than I can speak it, which I suppose is pretty unusual, really, because for so many years it's always been seen as a, well, it's always been a spoken language. And I think it's important, actually, the more people get like that. I think in order for Scots to be a language that lasts, a language with serious depth to it, and a language that continues on into the future and develops and changes and evolves like all languages have to if they want to survive, then it can't just be a spoken language. It has to have that written backing to it. And also it legitimizes it more. It says that you can speak it, but if you don't see it in print or on the internet or in the media, then it's always just a spoken thing that's for the home, as it has been over the past few hundred years. But if we wanted to break out and into a serious one of the main languages of Scotland, then it needs that written aspect to it too, definitely.
Well, I wish you well.
Aye, thanks very much.
Duncan Lockerbie speaking to Lynn Menny. And if you'd like a copy of The Quake Keel by Bill Tom for yourself, you can buy it for a fiver at tapsaltiri.co.uk. That's tapsaltiri.co.uk. Now, maybe I'm just preoccupied with food at the moment, but I kind of get to do it in my mind. There's a whole family in my mind now sitting around the Christmas table, and the plate comes in, and there's just this great big haddock.
A smoked haddock.
Oh, well, that makes all the difference then.
Fair broth, I hope.
How can you imagine a Christmas meal with a bit of holly stuck in its moo, probably?
Well, when you think of the alternative, your Yule's, to come back to your sowance, that would have been a main meal for many a buddy. But to make it a bit festive, the lady of the house would maybe put her gowd ring in it, and whoever got that in their ladleful, they would be the next dean to get married.
Dumplings. You see, I make my mum's dumpling recipe every, or try it out. I reckon that my grandfather died of silver thrupneys. It was not goldstones. Because he ate so many blooming silver thrupneys and sixpences. And he kind of used to put in sixpences and thrupneys into the dumplings. And the amount of, you know, the little paper bitties that they were wrapped in, I can just see them just vanishing inside his moustache and a beard. And just, but Stephen, and just, he died. Folks said he died of goldstones. It was silver thrupneys. Moving quickly on. Steve, your second choice, what's your song?
Well, we've got an important anniversary just passed, or rather a centenary, I could say. You ever heard of a thing called the Turraku?
Before mentioned, my grandfather was at the protest march in that.
Right?
As well. Yeah.
Back in 1913.
Aye.
So it's 100 years ago when they had this lad that got in a bit of bother with the new laws on paying national insurance that Lloyd George introduced, and he didn't want to do that because he thought that his firmer chiels were fair, we'll look it after, and weren't going to be no wheel and that kind of thing. So he ended up getting to court and having to pay a fine. In the end, he didn't pay the fine, so they came and took his coup away and tried to sell it, but nobody would hate, and so on and so forth. They ended up that the community bought the coup back and gave it back to the firmer. And it's been celebrated. There's a statue and everything in Turra. I think there's even a bit of the tune called Coup Corner. Coup Corner. And there's a song about it, which we've got singing here for Jordy Murison.
Here it is.
In 1911, Lord George did decide national insurance would hae to be paid for every man that wrought in the land, including Rob Patterson's hard-working band. Tooralai, tooraloo, Starrow it a' was the fight Turraku. Pay national insurance, said Robbie, nae fear, saying he was ordered in the court to appear. Pay up, said the judge, her your freedom you'll tyne. So the rest of the farmers, they paid Robbie's fine. Tooralai, tooraloo, Starrow it a' was the fight Turraku. 3.19 and 10 pence was still overdue, so the bailiffs they pointed to Robbie's fight coup to pay off his debt plus expenses and mair. They would unction the coup off in Turratoon Square. Tooralai, tooraloo, Starro it a' was the fight Turracoo. Nobody offered a bid for the coup, and a riot of the thousand folk there did ensue. In a stable the old unctioneer had to hide, and the pelt at the bobby's favoury side. Tooralai, tooraloo, Starro it a' was the fight Turracoo. Syne the coo was cut loose, and she doon wi' her heed. Syne up wi' her tail, and awa' she did speed. She bringed a' through Turra, though files gae hard pressed, till she was catched and placed under arrest. Tooralai, tooraloo, Starro it a' was the fight Turracoo. The farmers clubbed in, and they bought the coo back. Syne a great hero Robbie did mark. Auld Ochan's Eel said, 'twas a richt how do ye do, but the Starro it a' was the far-famed fight coo. Tooralai, tooraloo, aye, the Starro it a' was the fight Turracoo.
Johnny Munison, the fight Turracoo, Turra 1913, a great event. And when Johnny was singing that, we were talking about events in 2013. Chris, what sort of events would you remember from 2013 for yourself?
Well, the dictionaries themselves, we've been working hard, but the fruits of that won't be showing until next year.
We've made the dictionaries.
We've made major strides forward on the Dictionary of the Scots Language, the online one. But just looking around Scots in general, two major events of the year have been the translations of Tintin and Asterix. We've got The Dark Isle translated by Susan Rennie and Asterix and the Pechts translated by Matthew Fitt. So get that in your Christmas stocking.
That's a goodie. That's a goodie. What about you, Steve? What's your highlight?
I suppose one of the highlights was that thing we worked on together, Frieda, about the Greg Duncan collection. For folk that didn't ken, Greg Duncan is really the kind of short name for the collection of about 3,000 songs that were put together about 100 years ago in Aberdeenshire for Gavin Gregg, who was a schoolmaster, and the Reverend James Duncan. And that's been published in about 8 volumes for the 1980s through to 2002.
All edited by lead editor was Dr. Emily Lyle. Come to Emily in a minute.
That's right, aye. And aye, so you were leading on that yourself.
And that, Christine, we filmed 16 ballad singers. Steve and I were part of that. 34 ballads. 2 weeks later, we had 3,000 hits on that website. So it's still up there on the website of the School of Celtic and Scottish Studies. And that was the year 2012-13 when I was artist in resident. And one of my proudest moments, I think, or probably the proudest moment, best moment in this 2013 year, was watching Dr. Emily Lyle at last getting recognition for the mammoth task, the amount of work she's done for Scottish culture, and being lead editor, especially in this Greg Duncan collection. She was awarded the Hamish Henderson Memorial Award at the Traditional Music Awards just recently, and she went up there and got the award at the ceremony, and what a proud moment that was for everybody, and she just got a huge standing ovation for that. So that was my highlight of 2013, and just to be able to be part of that whole event was a fantastic thing. Right, far have we got to? Oh, 16th century, we're coming for 2013, back to the 16th century, in one fell swoop. Listen to this.
Thank you.
was an extract, believe it or not, from the Bonnie Jesu by the 16th century Scots composer Robert Carver. I could listen to that idea. I just love that. And it sets the scene for our next item. I had the joy and the delight on the evening of the 15th of November to be part of the congregation or the audience in the High Kirk of St Giles in Edinburgh, listening to the singers for the Sangsquil, taking part in a concert reconstruction of the Mass for the Feast of St Mary Magdalene, sung to the setting for sax voices. It was magical. But it was part of a very special day, a celebration of the 500th anniversary of Aeneidus, a verse translation of Virgil's Aeneid, made by Gavin Douglas, provost of the High Kirk of St Giles, 1475 to 1522. The Hail Day was organised by Dr. Jamie Reid Baxter, Honorary Research Fellow at the University of Glasgow. And I asked Jamie to tell us about Gavin Douglas.
Gavin Douglas is a sort of McDermid of the 16th century in the sense that Gavin Douglas created a fantastic language worthy of the European Renaissance, a language that Scots, a form of Scots that could be used to say anything at all. In other words, exactly what McDermid did, we sang shaw, penny weep, and a drunk man looks at the thistle. It's not just spoken Scots. It's incredibly aggrandised. He says that he's taken words for Latin and French, and he even says even for English, to give himself the vocabulary fit for translating Virgil into Scots.
But the significance of this is huge because it has lasted the test of time from the 16th century.
It has indeed, although Gavin Douglas is the least kent of the three great markers. We are kent about Dunbar, most of us kent about Robert Henderson, but Gavin Douglas is the great unknown. Oh, there's Roy Eye and there's Gavin Douglas, but folk didn't really read Gavin Douglas to the same extent. And this 500th anniversary was the perfect excuse to show folk, aye, but you should read Gavin Douglas because it's absolutely marvellous. And getting Rob Wilson to perform Gavin Douglas showed Aberdeen, jeepers, this is just as alive and communicative and forceful as Dunbar or Henderson.
What about the significance of the music? I mean, we had a fantastic performance tonight. It was just something that you hear about, but you never experience that often in St Giles.
Aye, that's true. It's something you didn't experience that often in Scotland at all. This is the music of Gavin Douglas's own time. This is the music that Gavin Douglas would have heard sung in St Giles when he was the provost of the High Kirk of Edinburgh. And so the idea was to reconstruct the Mass for the day on which, he tells us, he completed the Aeneidus, reconstruct the Mass that he would have celebrated that morning in St Giles, because it's the feast day of St Mary Magdalene. It's a big, big feast. And it's quite likely that Gavin Douglas himself would have been the celebrant, as you say, of the Mass.
And after that, we had a very special performance of Flodden. Now, tell us about that.
Aye, we certainly did. This is a work that I commissioned back in 2004 for the Dunedin Concert with money for the Arts Council. In memory of King James IV, we were doing a concert celebrating King James IV. And the composer, Sheena Phillips, asked me what kind of text should I set. And I suggested this poem, Praising James IV, for 1512. In other words, the year of Four Flodden, and that it could be combined with the Flowers of the Forest. And Sheena's a genius, and she made the most tremendous kind of symphonic poem for chorus out of this combination, so that the poem starts, that the music starts joyfully and in Latin, and gradually it's overwhelmed by the lamentations, dool and way, and the ends just with the Flowers of the Forest being the last words there.
But there's a connection, isn't there, between Gavin Douglas and Flodden?
Oh, aye. Gavin Douglas's two elder brothers were killed at Flodden. He completes the Aeneidus, which is Scotland hitting the Hechts, on the 22nd of July, 1513, and on the 9th of February, the golden reign of James IV is at an end. So that was the connection we wanted to bring out, the whole event celebrating Gavin Douglas was quiet, Scotland's glory, 1513, but it was a glory that fell suddenly into nicht.
The significance, then,
Jamie, of Gavin Douglas in the 21st century. What is that?
The significance of Gavin Douglas in the 21st century is to show what the Scots language is capable of and what the Scottish people are capable of. And the music of Robert Carver that we were singing yesterday in St Giles shows what the Scots were capable of in music, just as Gavin Douglas's Aeneid shows what the Scots were capable of in poetry. This is European scale, world class culture produced by a very, very proud, independent nation with its own language, its own identity, its own culture that was second to none.
Dr. Jamie Reid Baxter on Gavin Douglas. Great few quotes in that, isn't it?
And can I just come in there and say that if Tapsaltiri Press and Gavin Douglas had got together, now that's avant-garde for you, because he and Henryson, and particularly Dunbar, they were pushing the borders of their day. And it'll be nice to see the same thing happening at Tapsaltiri.
Well said.
Well said.
Well said. You're listening to Scots Language Radio, SLR. This is Frieda Morrison, and with me is the studio guest, Dr. Chris Robinson, through the Scottish Language Dictionaries, and my chum and regular contributor, the much talked about Stephen Byrne. Now, Steve, your third choice of the day, what is it?
Well, you were mentioning earlier about the Trad Music Awards up in Aberdeen, and ilka year they hae, I think, the Hall of Fame. And this year, the Gaugers were one of the inductees, Peter Hall, Arthur Watson and Tam Spears. And here's Peter and Arthur singing a song for the Greg Duncan collection called Mull na Beinne. Do you ken where Mull na Beinne is?
Yeah.
It's the Mill of Boindy, which is a big firm in the north of Banffshire. So here we go, Mull na Beinne.
Here it is.
When I was young and in my prime, good figs like me, there was no money. I was the best man in the byne, I inform and long at Mull na Beinne. Rero, rero, dear, oh dear, rora, rora, Mull na Beinne. I was the best man in the byne, I inform and long at Mull na Beinne. When I agreed with Johnny Mull, my fee was £5 and a guinea. I did drive his foremost parent to lead the manies a Mull na Beinne. Rero, rero, dear, oh dear, rora, rora, Mull na Beinne. I was the best man in the byne, I inform and long at Mull na Beinne. When this old hat of mine was new, it cost me mair nor half a guinea. Mair nor 40 years ago, among the hash of Mull na Beinne. Rero, rero, dear, oh dear, rora, rora, Mull na Beinne. I was the best man in the byne, I inform and long at Mull na Beinne. When this old hat of mine was new, it cost me mair nor half a guinea. Held a' the lassies at Brannan Fair, gazing at the foremost man, a Mull na Beinne. Rero, rero, dear, oh dear, rora, rora, Mull na Beinne. I was the best man in the byne, I inform and long at Mull na Beinne.
Mull na Beinne, Peter Hall and Arthur Watson there. Of course, the entire Gaugers included Tom Spears. Our congratulations to the Gaugers for that award mentioned there by Steve. And Steve, you are going to be a regular companion if you didn't just run off after this. Which I hope you win.
We'll see if we get on.
But you're going to be covering a few things, topics in the singing world. What you building up to in January?
Well, over the past year, I've been working away for the Scots Language Centre that produces the programme, looking at various parts of the year and occasions coming up. So basically going to be representing that in song over the coming months. But in particular, there's an event at the start of February that I'm involved with, which is celebrating the work of Violet Jacob. She's a well-known poet from my home county of Angus, and we've been asked to really celebrate the songs that have been made for her words. People like Jim Reid have put music to the poems, and some of the poems are 100 years old now and have a wee bit of resonance.
Name one.
Well, something like The Norland Wind, or The Wild Geese is actually the name of the poem.
Wild Geese, I love Jim singing that.
Aye, and then things like her poem Halloween, they've got enough of good resonance with the First World War and I think that's coming up next year, so that'll be interesting.
Really interesting. No, I think we've got a scoop in our first programme. I'll say it again, I think we've got a scoop in this first programme. If you had to think of a Scots voice or a Weel Kent face that exuded Christmas and joy, full of humour, and wasn't afeard to speak her mind, far would it be?
It would be Mary Doll.
Hit it in one, absolutely. Files, but Mary Doll herself, now playing Cinderella in His Majesty's Theatre in Aberdeen. Elaine C. Smith, otherwise known as. Well, I managed to catch up with Elaine when we were both doing at the Scottish Parliament building at Holyrood, talking time out to look at the Andrew Carnegie exhibition. Did Andy see it, by the way?
No.
It was a cracker, a wee corker. Right, we had a seat and a cup of tea and I speared at Elaine if she thought to herself as a Scots speaker.
Yes, I do. I don't think I'm an old Scots speaker, but I love... I think we're trilingual, you see.
Trilingual.
I think we speak English, we speak Scots, and then we speak our own dialect. So I've certainly found going to Aberdeen, and I'm very lucky. I get to tour Scotland all the time and see my country, and that really helps me understand the different regions. You know, I think we tend to get stuck, particularly in the Central Belt. You know, we moan about people being London-centric, but I can imagine people in Inverness and Aberdeen are a bit sick of the Central Beltism that goes on, you know.
Do you like language? Do you enjoy using language?
Oh, I love it. God, well, I mean, for somebody that gabs as much as me, then you've got to enjoy it in some way, whether folk listen to me or not. But things like that, there's that sense, whether folk like listening to me or not. That's a Scottish way of expressing myself, you know, that isn't particularly Glaswegian, because I'm from Lanarkshire, and there is a huge difference between Lanarkshire. I was brought up in a place where they talked about the nicht, and they talked about the skill and going to the kirk. Now, that was only 15 miles outside of Glasgow. When I went into Glasgow to hear, you know, that different dialect of people talking about up the stair, or there, mama, my da, all of that, we would never have spoken like that. So those different dialects, only 15 miles or less apart, it's always Scots that say to me, for instance, we've just done the special of Rabsy for Christmas, it's always Scots that say, and English people understand it. English people never say, if they don't understand, that's up to them, you know, if they don't make the effort. But it's us, we cringe at ourselves and go, but do they understand those words? And we're the poor relation. We are people who don't speak properly. And I have to say, you get it up touring England a lot as well, and Wales, you get it in regions of Wales as well, where they speak their own Yorkshire or Lancashire dialect, and then when they go into what is received as polite or even political or their work environment, they adopt a different form of English. But for me, I love hearing people adopt their own
so
words.
It's not just us.
It's not just us. No, I think it goes, you know, if you the UK wide. But I do think there is something particular to Scotland about the lack of pride in our language.
But do you think things are changing?
Yes. I think just even of an awareness that now I'm going into my own accent, and now I'm, you know, I'm all for clear speech. I'm all for people being articulate and educated and the ability to communicate with anyone. So what if you have to slow things down a wee bit? It's great when you're back amongst your own folk, if you like, and you can talk as fast as you want and use phrases that would maybe be a bit impenetrable to others. There's nothing wrong with that, as long as there is an awareness of what you're doing, and as long as there isn't an element of shame about the way you speak or the level of your accent.
Now, you mentioned Rabsy Nesbitt.
Yes.
I noticed that. Can you tell us when that's going to be on television?
I know it's a Christmas special. We haven't got the transmission date, so it'll be sometime over the sort of Christmas week or whatever.
Can
you know?
Give us a wee clue about the plot?
Oh, yes. This one is called Rab has Well, it's very interesting. 25 years since I started doing it, we're now back where we started because, you know, the bedroom tax does come in too. As you can imagine, he's turned his the spare bedroom into a study. And when asked what they're using it for, they say horses, dogs, study of horses, dogs and lottery. His work is never done. And he becomes Rab in Hoodie. He adopts a hoodie and he goes out in a Robin Hood approach of actually trying to redistribute the wealth, if you like, of the nation, for his own purposes and so there's a lovely Christmassy nice message for Rab in there somewhere as well. So it's quite hard hitting in lots of ways. It doesn't miss the mark, but it does celebrate his the language definitely.
And finally, the Panto in Aberdeen.
Yes, indeed. Cinderella. So really looking forward to that. And I can give you, I'm Adele at one point, and she is singing about and you'll be in Macduff, you know, with all those sorts. But also that Cockney Doric thing will be a vision or fantastic, something to behold.
I never miss your Panto. Well, I love it. It'll be there.
It's become a bit of an institution, and I have to say that part of the world, Aberdeen, has been so, so kind to me, and I've just loved getting to know it and being part of it.
Cockney Doric, I love it. Elaine C. Smith, you know, my favourite folk, and I'm going to see her in Aberdeen Panto at His Majesty's Theatre in a wee whiley. Looking forward to that event. We'll be among the Bairns and the Young Farmers Clubs, as usual. But a great event. Now, wintry words. What kind of wintry words can we think about?
You can tell that Elaine's dreaming of a white Christmas, just as long as there's no a blind drift. We've got loads of words for snowflakes. Flaggy, big, wet flakes of snow. A flocht, a flochen, or a flicht. It even sounds
go
like...
Go and say that again.
A flocht,
Steve.
A flochen, or a flicht.
A flocht, a flochen, or a flicht.
They all sound like snowflakes, don't they? Yeah. A scalva, that's light, small flakes. Swither, snow that kind of make up its mind what way to come down.
That's just like me.
And one of my absolute favourites, there's a word from the south, a agonial blast comes from Hoik. And agonial blast was a particular storm because of the number of sheep that died. Agonial is a dead sheep. Much decayed. And the custom was that the shepherd would pick it up, get a shack. If it bided together, then it was the property of the farmer. If it all fell to bits, the shepherd could take a team and feed it to his family.
Right, well, I get off with a story. Another story.
Oh, go on then.
Didn't I tell him to you about this? This is a secret story. It actually happened that an ex-colleague, a broadcasting colleague, appeared at my front door out in the hinterland of Aberdeenshire at 2 in the morning, just in another state of fricht, because she rented a cottage up in the wilds of Strathdon with an outside toilet, as they normally have. And she'd gone into the outside toilet, pushed open the door, and there was a dead sheep sitting upright on the toilet. And there's a great big een looking at her, just looking at her, great big een. Well, she took to her heels and entered the car and drove down. The fit had happened, of course, was a sheep had gone into the sheddy, the wee sheddy, turned round and knocked himself back on the toilet pot and shut the door at the same time. And it stuck there, couldn't get off. You can't mean by a sheep in its back. That was it, sheep in the toilet, same thing.
And it was dead.
It was dead. It sat there for I don't know how long, but you can there. Would you imagine that going into the toilet? Great big eel. Anyway, I digest.
But us, we've never did a winter yet.
We've never did a winter. It fuck ends on fitting a Bethlehem a nicht. That's what I say. We're never sure. Right, far was we?
After that story, I can't imagine.
Steve Byrne was going to do a song. Well, I've asked him to do a song because he's just one of my favourite singers. Fit as it can to be.
It's a song called Hug My Nae, which is a Violet Jacob poem about three chiels that get a bit lost on... New Year's Eve, we about three bottles of whiskey, un or trois, which become a bit empty.
Okay.
Oh, it's fine when the new and the old year meet, and the lads gang roaring in the lighted street. There's me and there's Alec and the miller's loon, and Joddy that's the piper out of Forfortune. Joddy fa, up with the chanter lad, and geese a blaw. For we'll step to the tune while we fit until the shoon, till the pillies and the provost be to sort us saw. We've three bonny bottles, but the third needs tomb. In the road ran whiskey, it's myself would soon. But we'll stand while we can and be dancing while we may, for there's twa way to finish and it's hogmanay. Joddy fa, there's an all carl glowling out to hench yon wa. But we'll soon get him looped to the pipe until he coop, for we'll gee him just a drappy and he'll no say nah. My heat's demanded, my feet's the same, and they'll know we're together, it's a long road home. We've 2 mile to travel, and it's more like 3, but I've got a grip of Alec, and you'd best grip me. Joddy fa, the morn's near bracken, and we'll need a wa. Get your eye blonde strong, then we'll maybe get along, and the devil take the laddie that's the first to fa.
Steve Byrne, what was the song card again?
Hogmanay.
Very apt. Right. You're listening to Scots Language Radio, SLR. This is Frieda Morrison, and with me in the studio is Dr. Chris Robinson through the Scottish Language Dictionaries, and our regular contributor, a song sorter. You've just heard singing there, sorting the song, Steve Byrne. And it's just about the end of the programme. Just about it. The 13. Did somebody squeak there?
I just said, oh.
I've been getting rows through this for making noises with my pencils after it, and somebody, you ain't making more noises than me. Okay, we hope you've enjoyed taking a peek into some of the nooks and crannies of the country. So if there's something going on you'd like us to ken about, just tell us. We want to hear if you are the airs. And we'll be back in another month at the end of January with another edition. Okay, here's the information you need to get in contact with. Telephone number 01738 440199. 01738 440199. The email address is info@scotslanguageradio.com. info@scotslanguageradio.com. Okay, and the site page is either www.scotslanguage.com/Scots Language Radio. I'll do it again. www.scotslanguage.com/Scots Language Radio. And my hearty thanks to my studio cronies. I almost said my hairy thanks. It's my hearty thanks to my studio cronies. Special guest Dr. Christine Robinson and the man in charge of Arthur Musical and other things, the song sorter, Steve Byrne. And another big thank you to our soon sorter. Oh, you haven't heard, Faye, but we hear him speaking to us in our lugs, Richard Werner. And we'll be back, as I said, at the end of January. Fan will hear an exclusive interview with the Loons Fae Cabrach Radio. I have been allowed into their headquarters up in the Cabrach, and it's not easy to find, and it's even more difficult to get out of. And of course, we'll be hearing about what's going on up in Shetland. But for me, here Christmas and a new year you would like to hear. And I finish with an extract from one of my favourite poems. This is by Lillian Grant Rich. It's Cad, A Christmas Prayer. I'm just a humble tractorman. I dinna ken who to pray. But I haven't far to thinking, ploughing here out on the brae, with the gulls a flocking round me like sae many marble dews. I've been counting o'er my blessings. There files mair nor I can use. I look up to the left abeen, and ken ye're near me, Lord, and maybe ye'll forgie me if I try to say a word. It winna be the why they pray in kirks a' o'er the land, but somehow in your wisdom, Lord, I ken ye'll understand. It's coming on to Christmas. I hae beef and neeps and brose, but there's them that winna hae so much. Tak pity, Lord, on those. Let nae living thing be hungry. Let nae living thing be cauld. Be it bird or beast or bairn, or the helpless or the auld. The few but words I'm saying, ye could hardly ca' a prayer. I just ask as good as I hae got for mankind everywhere. So that a' out o'er the world, when the stars are glinting bright, there'll be peace and joy and plenty on this blessed Christmas night.